What's up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the Fast Friday podcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm Craig Smoke, Sikkim365.com team reporter, also host of UNR weekdays 12 to 3 on ESPN Central Texas, and joined as always by Grayson Grundhafer, director of broadcasting, also recruiting and team reporter for Sikkim365.com. And we are definitely in the offseason when it comes to football, but we're right in the thick of things when it comes to men's and women's basketball, and we're about to be right in the thick of things when it comes to baseball here in a few weeks as well. But it is spring sports season. It is signing day number two season as well. And we will touch on a lot of different things on the podcast today. We now know when Baylor will be holding their spring game, which gives us a loose idea of when they might actually begin spring practices here in a few weeks. So we'll discuss that. Also, we're going to dip into some recruiting, because that really for football right now is the main thing that is going on. So we'll get some notes from Grayson on this week's episode. And of course, we'll talk about those red hot Lady Bears and Baylor men, as they have now won three in a row by the time you've heard this. And hopefully you're not listening too late, because that could have, you know, come and gone by the time if you're listening to this like a week later or something. But right now it's pretty good for both basketball programs, and we'll discuss that as well, in addition to getting into your mailbag questions for this week. But to start off this week's episode of the Fast Friday podcast, we have to talk about a departure to the football program, and have a feeling that, well, I think we've already done this a couple of times now already during the offseason, and have a feeling that perhaps we could, you know, be talking about two or three other names. I have no idea, just to be very clear on who those names are right now, but I know there's chatter about possible more attrition. And Grayson, B.J. Thompson is no longer with the Baylor football program. We learned a couple of days ago that he was going to be moving on, and this was quite a surprise because he was in line to see tons of playing time next season and the season following as a junior and senior. And really, this is, as you've seen flashes of what he's capable of doing off of the edge, his very rare natural pass rushing ability and quickness off the edge. This was a guy who I thought was going to be a major contributor the next couple of seasons, locks down one of those defensive end spots, and really allows them an opportunity to get to the quarterback a lot more as he continues to develop. But that's not going to be the case. BJ is no longer with the program, and that's just another member of that first recruiting class, that 2016 recruiting class that has seen someone leave after having signed and arrived on campus. It's, I don't think, a cursed class. I just think it was a very hastily put together class, and that you're not going to hit 100% even when you've been the head coach somewhere for 15 years in a row. You're still going to have a recruiting class where you lose a couple of guys each year. And I don't think this should really come as a surprise that there are departures from the 2017 class. But B.J. Thompson being one of those guys, that was definitely shocking to me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The 2017 class was one that, as you've stated, was put together really quickly, and so therefore you're not going to have 100% perfect fits, and I think we're seeing that. You know, a lot of guys just haven't fit in the way I guess the staff had hoped that they would, and so things like this happen. This is one that's unfortunate, though, because he's one of the most talented ones in that class, and so we've seen flashes. His freshman year came in extremely underweight, and so, you know, all we got to see was his pure athletic ability, and then this past year I think we got to see a little more refinement, a little bit of a bigger body, and he really took a step this year. He had four sacks this season. I felt like he was just, you know, kind of grazing his potential just a little bit, and so there's still a ton left for him to grow and develop and a ton more weight to put on, but he was one I was extremely excited about going into next year, one that I felt like could be, you know, a potential breakout guy, could be a guy that eventually had double-digit sacks, maybe next year, maybe the year after, but he was starting to kind of figure it out a little bit, and of course, he had, you know, troubles earlier this year because he got suspended at the beginning of the year as well, and I guess just couldn't break out of the funk, but, you know,
the fog.
Yeah, really. So I feel really bad losing him, because I think it does hurt Baylor next year. I really do, especially from a depth perspective. And he was flat out, in my opinion, going to be either the best or second best pass rusher on this team, depending on, you know, how you look at James Lynch. I think those were probably the two best candidates to be that guy. And so really tough loss. And I'm not going to sugarcoat that at all. He's a tough loss. And a lot of young guys are going to have to just completely step up going into next year.
Yeah, people have talked about Deonte Williams, you know, coming back, but that's not the same type of player. They've talked about Logan Compton, but that's not the same type of player. I mean, guys, sure, have similarities that they can rush the passer, but B.J. Thompson with his length and his burst off that edge was something that really wasn't present anywhere else on this roster. So, yeah, it's a big loss, and that's a player that you thought going into next year would be one of your better players just overall, or at least I expected him to be. So I really thought that BJ would pack on some more weight, and quite frankly, with just the flashes that he'd shown, I realized that it wasn't consistent by any means, and he wasn't a guy that was in on a ton of tackles or anything like that. But for what his role was as far as getting in the backfield, he was pretty – dadgum good at that. And I think by the time he was a senior and had gotten more to an ideal weight, if his speed remained and his technique improved, that he was a guy that I don't know about really anybody else on this roster right now, but that is one guy where I'd go, I think he'd play in the NFL. I think he'd be an NFL guy. And I think if he could get up to, like, let's say 10 sacks by his senior year, you know, get like six or so this year, if not more, maybe 10 or 12 his senior year, then yeah, that's not a first round guy, you know, like that, but maybe. I mean, if he's is a good enough size and is getting to the quarterback regularly, maybe, but definitely an NFL guy, and maybe that's still in the plans for him ultimately, but it just won't be as a graduate or as a player from Baylor University whenever his name does get called, if it gets called here in a couple of years. So no idea where he's headed, no idea what his future holds, but I do know that this was not, you know, a coaching staff decision of like, oh, we got to get B.J. Thompson out of here. From everything that I can tell, they were absolutely crushed by the fact that he's no longer on this team, and did everything in their power to try and help him with his issues and help him keep his nose clean and just get done what he needed to get done and go to class and go to football and graduate here in a couple years. They tried their hardest to keep him on the straight and narrow, but that just wasn't in the cards. And so they really didn't have many options. I mean, they couldn't really just, all right, just do your thing and don't worry about it. I mean, they couldn't do that. So I know that they tried time and time and time again to work with BJ and to help BJ, and it just was ultimately a BJ decision. It was Thompson's decision to decide to leave rather than do what would have probably been required of him to do had he stuck around. That was ultimately for him, it was better to leave than to stick around, finish these next 2 years, and just do what was required of him. And, you know, that can be looked at here in a few years as whether or not it was a good decision or not. That's for B.J. Thompson to ultimately have to deal with one way or the other. He may go off and have a brilliant NFL career, and I hope for the young man that he does. But, yeah, that's something that he'll have to just deal with, live with, and move on from. And as fans, hey, guys come and go, and you just roll with who you got. So he's not going to be a part of the ride next year or the year after. And I guess thanks for your contributions while you were here. You helped win some games. You know, you helped have an impact at times, and just wish you would have stuck around a little longer.
Yeah, and I mean, everything in life is a learning experience. So hopefully, you know, one way or the other, he learned something, whether it was a good decision or a bad decision. Either way, hopefully he's able to, you know, figure it out and go have a successful career. That's really all you can hope from him. It is, you know, like you said, really unfortunate, because third year on campus is usually when you take the biggest jump. And so that's kind of what everyone, I think, was hoping for with him. And you mentioned the NFL part of it, and just thinking about Baylor's roster and kind of, you know, especially that 2017 class. I would say if you look through the 2017 class, like from the beginning till now, Harrison Hand and B.J. Thompson had to be two of maybe the top five, maybe even three, top three most likely guys to go to the NFL. Out of that class. James Lynch is obviously in that group as well, but those two, I just feel like, you know, from the moment they stepped on campus, they had the size and the raw ability to do it. The height, the length, the raw ability to possibly make it to the NFL. And so really tough to see, you know, another one with so much potential leave. But again, this happens every year. Attrition happens to every single team in the country, and Baylor's going to have to develop their young talent and figure out how they're going to replace him and his production that they thought he was going to bring. And they're going to have to recruit. They're going to have to recruit extremely well to find a way to mask that and possibly bring in someone that has that kind of potential that BJ had. But obviously he would be a freshman, whoever they bring in. So,
yeah.
So now they're going to have to find a replacement. And
6'7" doesn't grow on trees either.
No,
with that speed.
Yeah, it doesn't. So they're going to have to figure that out. And I think some of the names that come to mind are some of the ones you mentioned: Logan Compton, Deontay Williams. When Matt Jones gets here, he'll be another likely guy that might have to step in. Nyadre Zuzua was the guy that I think everyone was hoping would play defensive end and possibly be opposite B.J. Thompson. But now I'm looking at it and I'm going, they might have to put him at rush at times because they might need him, you know, to get after the quarterback and maybe put James Lynch at the defensive end position and have that be your third down package. But they're going to have to figure it out, and it's definitely going to be tough. Marge Smith is another name that comes to mind, but it's a lot of unproven, unexperienced talent outside Deontay Williams. So
the thing that you hate is just that this was a guy who had shown something. That's what's so unfortunate about it. Like, you know, when guys back during the season decided, like, I'm just going to quit and go somewhere else. Like, who was it? Was it Preciado? And who was the other player that left right around the same time? It was Preciado and...
Well, Elijah Hall left right around the same time.
Yeah, it wasn't him. It was the guy whoever left the exact same time as Preciado. Oh. I can't even remember now.
Yeah.
There's been so many guys that have, you know, come and gone in the program for the last 3 years or so. But, I mean, those guys were at positions where, like, hey, if Raja Preciado would have worked out in the secondary, that's fine, but he never did anything. So it's not like you really even know what you're losing. But with B.J. Thompson, you saw what he could do and what he could grow into. And that's what's really unfortunate is we've seen him make plays and we've seen him do some things that give you a lot of excitement moving forward, and so now you know you're losing something that does have some substance to it, as opposed to maybe players who decide to transfer because they're not seeing the field. He actually saw it, started on it, did all that, and yeah, it's not a fun loss. Neither was Harrison Hand, and you know, while we were all celebrating every new commitment in that 2017 class, just because that was the first time we really got to cover recruiting in about a year and a half. That was, you know, part of the excitement, and part of the excitement as well was just that, hey, it's a new staff and it's a new beginning and all of that. But you also had to know at the time that there was a reason. And at the time, we're not going to say this because you're having fun. You're in the moment. You're going to let these guys pan out how they're going to pan out. But now that we've got a couple of years behind us and you see the number of guys who have transferred out of that class, there's a reason a lot of those guys are available. The reason why a lot of those guys who had really massive upside weren't heavily recruited by a lot of other teams. I mean, Justin Harris and B.J. Thompson are two names that immediately come to mind. I know Justin Harris got like the on-national signing day LSU offer finally, and there were some other programs involved with those guys, but for their upside and for their size, they were very under-recruited, and it makes you look back and go, that's probably a reason for that. Probably a reason why, because it wasn't a lack of talent. It wasn't any of that. So, you know, I'm sure that's part of why some of these players were available to be taken and recruited back then. But yeah, you look at it and there's the overwhelming majority is still on campus and still participating, but Harrison Hand's now gone. Reconnected with Fran Brown up at Temple. We'll see how it goes for them up there. DeMarco Artis never made a dent, and he was one of those guys that every time we'd ask about him, Rule was always kind of coy and didn't really ever have anything overwhelmingly positive to say. He always had to be brought up. He was never brought up. That wasn't exactly the case with B.J. Thompson, but Matt Rule always kind of did have a little bit of that. He never just was overwhelming. He's not really an overwhelming guy about anybody necessarily, but I've just from time to time heard him talk about a certain player, go like, oh, I'm surprised he's not way more excited about that guy, or I'm surprised he's not gushing a little bit more over that guy. And then you realize later on when you learn certain things, like, oh, well, that's why he didn't talk about Justin Harris, or that's why he didn't talk about this guy nearly as much. And DeMarco Artis was one of those. I just couldn't believe, given the lack of experience they had, that he didn't do more when he was a freshman here. I just expected him to, maybe because of his offer list, and maybe that was unfair. But, you know, he never made a dent, whereas Harrison did. Tamarcus Davis, dude, another guy with a lot of upside, no longer with the team. Justin Harris, we know the situation there. B.J. Thompson, now know the situation there as well. Looks like Eliasa Anderson, chatter, could be a guy that's looking around. He's entered the transfer portal. We do know that. So that doesn't mean he's not going to be at Baylor, but it's an indication that he's at least looking around a little bit. So we'll wait and see on him. But, yeah, that's a lot of guys out of that first recruiting class that have not panned out, but it's like a fifth or a fourth of that overall class. So it's not as dire maybe as it appears, even though there has been a rash of guys leaving here lately.
Yeah, and Trayvon Lewis is in that group as well.
Yeah, he was here so short that I went right over his name. But, yeah Trayvon exactly. Lewis too.
He was another one. And you hit the nail on the head, though, when you said BJ and Harrison Hand were two guys that we've seen put production on the field, and now they're gone. So they were two guys you knew could play, and so now you're losing them, and that's the toughest part about this whole thing. And the 2017 class is, you know, shrinking a little bit, but there's been some guys that have stepped up in that class as well, and so there have been a lot of positives to go with the few negatives.
Sure.
In that class, of course. So really unfortunate situation. I wish BJ Thompson all the best, and Baylor's just gonna have to figure out a way to move forward and just try to figure out a way to replace him.
Yeah, and that class will end up having way more contributors than guys who left and never made a dent, or guys who were here briefly, made a scratch, and then left, like a BJ Thompson. I mean, that's still a class that included Charlie Brewer, Tristan Ebner, John Lovett, James Lynch. So they still hit on a lot of guys, and probably about as equal right now, from what we know, guys who are proven versus guys who are gone, probably about even, I would think. Probably like 6-6 or something along those lines. And then a bunch of guys who we still don't know yet. Some guys that probably could transfer in the future because they see the writing on the wall. Or some guys who are going to step up and after a couple of years of conditioning and growing up and learning will be big contributors as juniors and seniors, you know. So that's some of the fun of spring football, is finding out who the new faces are, who's the new emerging guy to see some action next year. And that will all get figured out here starting in a few weeks, because we now know when the spring game is going to be. The spring that BJ Thompson will not be a part of, but the spring game is now set, and they announced that in the middle of this week, Saturday, April the 13th, a noon kickoff time, although they may not even have kickoffs depending on the format for this thing. But Saturday, April 13th at noon at McLean Stadium, it'll be the annual green and gold game. So that would lead me to believe that you subtract a week for spring break, because they always take off a week for spring break from practices. So that's putting you like the first week of April. It's usually like a month of practices, so we're looking at probably like the last week of February or the first week of March for, I would think, spring practices starting up. I would say it's somewhere most likely in that range, given the week that they'll have off and given that they don't practice every day. They practice like two or three times a week. So, we now know when the spring game will be, and obviously that'll be a big recruiting weekend, I'm sure, and it'll be our next chance and our last chance for a while to see these 2019 Baylor Bears. But, good to have that all in order now and know when to plan to be at McLean Stadium again.
Yeah, and hopefully it goes a little bit better than the past two, because the past two spring games have not exactly been the most overwhelmingly competitive or, you know, encouraging games, I would say. I know spring games aren't necessarily ever that way, but
I will say this, though. Last year led me to believe that this year's team was way better than the spring game team. 2 years ago, they were both just really, really bad. Last year, that team ended up being a lot better than I thought based on what I saw in the spring game.
Exactly, yeah, and I would agree. I think the spring game last year was a million times better than the one, you know, 2 years ago. But I think this one will and should be better, even better than that. And it's always fun. There's going to be a lot of recruiting, of course, lots of recruits in town for that game as usual. It's just the first chance to see everyone. And I know with spring practices coming up, I'm really looking forward to see guys that, you know, maybe take a big step next year and try to figure out, you know, who might be an instant contributor or who might be a guy that we haven't gotten to see at all that maybe takes that step, and maybe someone that replaces B.J. Thompson as well, you know, someone that really has grown in their year or two on campus, and they're going to need a lot of guys to grow, especially on that defensive line now. They're going to have to, you know, figure out a lot of things up front, and so I think spring practice is always a great time to look at that and see guys that are taking that next step, and then, of course, the green and gold game kind of just caps that all off.
That's what's the most frustrating thing to me about the guys who are transferring. It's an every year thing, so it's to be expected, but I think what's the most frustrating about it to me is that you have depth on O-line now, and then Elias Anderson wants to leave. Or you're finally starting to look like you're going to have some depth in the D-line, and now you lose a couple of D-linemen, you know? So it's just like, are they ever going to get to the point where they have the depth that they want everywhere? Because kind of thought maybe they'd be getting there by now, but when you lose a Hand, a Johnson, or a Thompson, I mean, and guys like that, it just kind of takes a little bit of a hit to that depth. I mean, they still have plenty of O-linemen. I think Elias Anderson, if the transfer portal thing ends up meaning that he leaves Baylor, is going to be like some killer to that O-line, because that could be a situation where you just simply got passed over. But a B.J. Thompson, that's a step back. You know, that definitely is. So can they just keep building and building and building to where you're never not really going to not take a hit most of the time, unless you're just so loaded somewhere that you can afford to, like an Alabama. But can you ever get to a point where those blows are a little softer because, okay, that's fine, we got four or five other defensive ends, rather than, oh crap, there was our entire pass rush for next season other than James Lynch, which is what it looks like right now because that's kind of all we've seen. But, yeah, I know they're moving in that direction. I have faith that they're going to get there. I just think that some of these transfers are delaying that process a little bit.
Yeah, I'd agree up front. They absolutely could not lose anyone up front, to be honest. I mean, for depth purposes, because they like to play so many guys up front, it's going to require young guys having to play and having to grow up maybe before they're ready. And you're right. It is just one of those things where you go, wow, they finally were getting that depth. They finally had those key players at, you know, key positions, and then they lose the key guy at both. I think cornerback is a little deeper to where it's not as big of a hit, but I think on the defensive line, especially that rush position, you know, he was the guy that they found to make that stride. And so it is tough. And it's also tough because these are Coach Rhule guys. These are guys that he brought in. And so it's just, that makes it even worse to see that, is, you know, because usually you expect guys that were maybe from a different coaching staff to leave. But right now we're seeing guys that, you know, he brought in. And so that's also one of those things, because, you know, he thinks that they're going to be very good, or else he wouldn't have brought them in.
Right.
So that also is a little, you know, discouraging to see that.
Yeah, but I mean, he knew these guys for about 2 weeks before he signed some of them. So yeah. they are Matt Rhule guys. But knowing the requirements of being in this program and the amount of time in your life that it takes, and this goes for a lot of programs out there, but I know in particular for Baylor, it is not the easiest thing in the world being a football player. It is not as glamorous as you would believe it to be, that a lot of hard work goes into that bowl win and goes into those practices and goes into just doing what is required of these guys, because they're doing a lot more too. I mean, the community service and things like that than most other players around the country have to do, at least to that extent. You know, everybody does their little community service thing, but I think this program right now, like, really takes it to another level of putting that effort and time into the community. And so it demands a lot of you, and it's not for everybody. Doesn't surprise me at all when a guy's here for like a semester and is like, yep, this isn't for me. Like, this isn't the lifestyle I want to lead. It is surprising when this guy's been here a couple years and has kind of made it through that initial toughest part of the grind, which is getting accustomed to it, and then deciding, like, you put in all that work, but you're still going to just go. And that's got to be something very frustrating for them as well. But hey, it does open up scholarships. We all knew there was going to be attrition. So the fact that there is some is not shocking. The fact of like who a name is or who a couple names have been is a little bit more on the shocking side. But it does free up scholarships. It does create some room. It does give some breathing room in some cases as well. So in recruiting this week, obviously they had the get together last weekend, the camp, and still putting the finishing touches on 2019, starting on 2020. Grayson, what do you want to tell us about the recruiting side of things this week?
Yeah, I think that mainly this week, let's just talk 2019. 2020 had their junior day. They had their, you know, big moments there. But I think as we're getting closer to signing day, 2019 is becoming, you know, more and more important, of course, because it's the one that's, you know, about to be finished and here in a couple weeks. So the first name I want to talk about is Garmon Randolph. So he is a prospect out of Jefferson, Georgia, and he came in, I think he measured in like 6'7", 225. And so you want to talk about a BJ Thompson replacement. That's what he is. And he is not as athletic as BJ Thompson, not as twitchy. BJ was so quick off the ball. He had a lot of technique to grow into, but he was just so quick. But one thing that Garmon does have is he already has some weight. And so that's big. Being that he's already 225 pounds, many people were saying, you know, when BJ got here, he was more like 205 instead of 215. So
I don't doubt. I wouldn't even be surprised if you told me he was 195.
Yeah, exactly. So to have that extra weight just kind of means he's already a little bit thicker, probably already a little bit more ready to play. And I think he's a guy that will play a little bit of rush because they're going to see what they have with him this year, because they're going to need to find out with all of these young guys what they have. But I think eventually he's going to be a guy that's more like 6'7", 250, 260, that can actually play that defensive end position. And I think that would be such a great addition to this team to have a guy like that. And I actually think that's what they wanted BJ Thompson to grow into, was a 6'6", 6'7", you know, 250-pound defensive end that could stop the run but also was an elite pass rusher. And they never really got that with him because he was just a little bit, you know, too skinny, too small. And so what wasn't really an impact in the run game. And I think what they're looking at for the rushing position is someone more like a Matt Jones or a Logan Compton, a guy that can drop back and play a little more coverage and not just solely be a rusher, like BJ kind of was at this point in his career. And so Garmon is a guy, he visited Baylor, took his official visit this past weekend, loved it, really enjoyed it. He was supposed to take an official visit to Ole Miss, canceled it.
Your bank account's not gonna like that.
No. But he has said he is down to LSU and Baylor. So LSU and Baylor, he is going to visit LSU this week, from what I've heard. So there it is. It's pretty much gonna be a two-horse race, and LSU wants him at tight end, Baylor wants him at defensive end. He doesn't care what position he plays. But Baylor's definitely selling, playing time, potential early playing time. They're definitely selling potential because he's only played defense for 1 year. And so there's an opportunity there, you know, to sell a lot to him. And he would be a big-time get for this class. He's got some great – I mean, he's got Auburn, Florida, Florida State, LSU, Michigan, North Carolina, Penn State.
So why is he not a more highly talked-about guy?
He is. He's the number one guy right now for Baylor.
I mean nationally. Why is he not a more talked about guy?
I think it has a lot to do with, I don't love his film as a tight end personally. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion, and everyone has offered him as a tight end. And so if you're not really looking at the potential that he has on the other side of the football, then it's easy to kind of be like, maybe he's not, you know, the top prospect at the tight end position. But I think he would be a huge, like a kind of a steal for Baylor because they only offered a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so for them to get in on him and get him on an official visit and possibly land him, that's huge. I mean, yeah, because his national rating, he's only at 87 basically nationally. That's not that high.
Yeah, it's basically their default because they probably haven't even watched this film yet.
Right. Right, and so don't look at potential or anything. Just look right at, plays tight end.
Let's face it, with these recruiting analysts, not many of them know, and like I'm not saying that I'm an expert by any means, and I'm not talking to you specifically, obviously, either, because we cover a lot of recruiting, but a lot of the quote-unquote expert analysts wouldn't know you know, what from their hole in the wall in terms of a guy panning out at another position in the future. They're looking at what they're seeing right in front of them and not – and, yes, they will tell you that they project what they're going to be like, and that's their justification when they have a guy more highly rated than he looks to be deserving of. Like, oh, no, it's his potential that we're basing it off of. So, basically, this guy should be way higher than 87 based on that future potential, but now I guess they're not seeing that.
Well, and the other strange thing about it is you look around the country and you see guys with offer lists nowhere near his offer list, and they're, you know, high four-star guys, and you go, okay, so you favor some offer lists but not others. And so
I favor the ones that have the schools on there that they like to cater to.
And the ones where the guy's committed to, say, a Texas.
You're right. Or, that's an automatic bump.
Yeah, so he's an interesting one. He's no doubt up at the top. He might be number one. He might be the number one prospect on the board for Baylor right now. And like I said, down to Baylor and LSU, I think it's going to be a close one.
Yeah. I'll say I don't like the I don't like Baylor going head to head with LSU in many things, especially not recruiting. But hey, they got Justin Harris, even though he got that late LSU offer on signing day. Now that was on signing day though, but we are getting pretty close to this next one, so they're in a good position. We'll see how it shakes out.
Someone brought up it seems the same as the Justin Harris one, and you know, I point out it's basically the exact opposite, because the LSU one, LSU came in really late after Baylor had done all this work to
literally
try to
signing
land him.
Day like the morning of signing day,
right? And in this case, LSU offered a long time ago and has, you know, been on him, but I think they've been on and off a little bit with him, and Baylor got on, you know, recently and have just every day. But he is getting talked to by both programs consistently every single day. So that's going to be very interesting to see how that one finishes out. So he would be a defensive end for Baylor. Garmon Randolph out of Jefferson High School in Georgia. The next guy that Baylor's been on for a long time really wanted him to sign early signing period. And didn't work out. He wanted to go on some more visits. And that's Paul Montevideo Poyali.
P2P.
PMP.
Or PMP. PMP. Why am I saying P2P? What is that even? I don't know. PMP.
Yeah.
Come on, Craig.
And he, 6'4", 330.
I don't think of P2W. Is that what it was?
P2W.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
what
I was thinking of.
Yeah. Don't remember what that stands for, though.
It was Palau to Waco.
Palau to Waco. Okay. Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, he's another, you know, really big-time prospect. They've been on for a long time. Went out to visit him this week, so they're making him a priority as well. And he can kind of play either way. He had 12.5 sacks at defensive tackle last year, but then he also is 6'4", 330, and could be that power guard that they've been looking for, someone that can really move the pile in the run game. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of a flip-flop either way. I see him as a guard personally. I think they could use the depth at guard as well. So that's another big name. He took his fourth official visit to Oregon State this past weekend. So he might take one more. Don't know where that would be yet. But he has taken four now. And I think Baylor... Honestly, right now, I think Baylor is in the lead. And so I think if things stay the way they are right now, I think he's going to end up at Baylor. But teams are trying to get him to take officials, and he's already been on a few. So maybe I'm wrong on that, but I think right now Baylor is in a good spot with him. And that would be another big get.
Yeah.
You know, another huge get for this class at a position of need. And so those are two guys that I think have really come, you know, their name consistently continues to pop up. You know, last week we talked about Cecil Powell a little bit. Mm-hmm. Baylor's still making him a priority. Still trying to land him.
Has he talked yet?
He's no. he put out this past week that he has three more offers that no one knew about, that no 247 site knew about. He didn't post it or anything. So, it's really an interesting recruitment. Like I've said, you know, it's just a weird recruitment. Mm-hmm. I mean, no other way to put it. He's got committed to Baylor in his profile, but then as a profile picture, I think of him in a Tech uniform or something.
What is the Tech link? I don't understand that.
I don't either. That's, I mean...
Like, I can understand Baylor because they've clearly made Florida a priority. So I know with Evan Cooper, he's going to be down in Florida and always looking for guys, or anybody else that you want to mention on the staff.
I'm sorry, he's in Indiana jersey. That's okay, my bad. Indiana. So not Tech. So I think Tech maybe.
I was going to say, with the Tech thing, I did not understand that at all.
And Indiana was one of his first offers.
Okay,
so,
that makes more sense then.
Yeah, it does. My bad on that one. But yeah, there he still says commit to Baylor. So
okay.
So that's just a weird one. We've talked. It's just weird. I mean, we haven't heard much from him. He didn't want to sign because he wanted to get more offers. The more offers.
Even though he had something he wouldn't tell anybody about.
Yeah.
Get more offers so he could have something to not tell anyone that he has.
Right, yeah. He put, update, I've been offered from Kansas, Louisville, and NC State. No one had any idea.
Yeah, well. And the thing about that, too, we're talking about recruiting sites and stuff. Your offers bump you. Like, not even your offers bump you up as much as your film does, I feel like. So, yeah, probably hurting himself just rating-wise. And what's so funny is that if you take him right now with the offers that are known and don't, and those aren't mentioned, the ones that he put up aren't mentioned yet, and he's got the grade that he's got. But if you add on more offers, the film's the exact same, the size the exact same, that gets him a bump because there's more schools that are apparently talking to him. I find that kind of strange because that's basically relying on coaching staff to tell you, oh, no, this guy is good, rather than the actual evaluation. So, yeah, probably hurting himself a little bit grade-wise there.
Well, and no doubt, especially because I feel like wasn't that the whole reason why he didn't sign?
Mm-hmm.
To basically bump his rating, get more offers and stuff. So, yeah, I agree. It's just a little bit weird. So, you know, he's a name that continues to get brought up. Baylor still wants him for sure. Still are making him a little bit of a priority still. So they really like him, and I like his game as well. So he's another name to keep an eye on. Elijah Ellis took his official visit this past weekend.
Explain this, please.
This another one he didn't sign. I still don't know why. I don't know a for sure reason from him that tells me why he didn't sign early. Maybe it was a grade thing. Maybe it was, you know, not because he's not waiting on more offers.
Hey, us these Texas guys, we'd like to take our time.
Yeah.
Just move a little slower than everybody else.
So I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking to myself, I guess he's going to be a Baylor Bear. He's committed.
He's eligible, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be.
Right.
So that one... I just said Cecil Powell's recruitment was weird. That one I have no clue about, to be perfectly honest. I assume his visit went well. I assume he's going to sign on signing day because he's still committed.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thoughts on that. I mean, he's a very versatile athlete, plays tackle, about 6'7". Be a great get. I mean, he's got good potential, but – just weird. I can't put money on exactly what he's gonna do. Like, I can't put my finger on it because I really don't know.
Yeah, there's other people that march to the beat of their own drum sometimes. You see that in recruiting from time to time. I actually kind of respect those guys a bit more than the glory hounds out there. You know, play the process however you want to do that. That's fine. But he's the type of guy that strikes me as just so different from the normal in terms of how he's handled his recruiting, that he could, like, on signing day just tell him, I'm going to Maryland. Wait, when did they offer you? You know, that he's, like, strikes me as that type of a guy that just out of nowhere signs with somebody. You're like, okay, had no idea they were even recruiting you, but good luck to you in the future. But, yeah, all we've ever heard with him is Baylor, basically. So, I mean, they wanted him to begin with. I'm sure they still want him, obviously. And, you know, more O-line depth's always a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. So that one's very interesting as well. A few other names. So they just offered Cornelius Evans a few days ago. He's 6'4 linebacker, committed to Georgia Tech. And he's got a few more offers. He's got Colorado State, UMass, Rutgers, about 6'4", 220. He's kind of a linebacker rush-in type. So he would actually, I think, fit in pretty well with what Baylor is trying to do on defense. Really interesting thing about him is he committed to Georgia Tech 2 days before he got his Baylor offer. And so I was talking to him a little bit, trying to figure out, you know, are you, you know, firmly committed because you just committed? So are you done? Like, is it a done deal? And he told me it's never a done deal until basically you sign.
Mm-hmm.
And so, which is very true. I just found it kind of interesting because he had just committed. So I was thinking it might be fresh, but it's not. So Baylor has a chance there. He said that he's looking at taking an official visit, but nothing is set in stone yet. So we'll see on that one. But that's another potential guy that could come in and fill that BJ Thompson void a little bit.
So I just so happened, I got a spam call. Don't we all love those? While we're recording the podcast, and as I exited out, my Twitter was still in the background, and look who there's an update on. Cecil Powell says, hard-hitting, this is from Steve Wiltfong, hard-hitting Baylor safety commit Cecil Powell picked off 8 passes as a senior and forced 4 fumbles, talks recent Indiana official, and heads to North Carolina State and Oregon next. So there
yeah,
you go.
I knew he was heading to Oregon because I had reported that
earlier. But he doesn't have an offer
earlier.
From them.
I do not believe... Maybe.
Yeah, well, that's true. He probably does. He just hasn't told anybody about it yet.
I mean, I don't see how you take an official visit without either an offer, or maybe literally they see him walk in, they see he's 6'1", 6'2", and then they offer.
Well, yeah, they very well might. Very well might. I mean, he is a good-looking athlete, and obviously Baylor wants him. I'd like to cover him, but clearly he's got some other options out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that'll be interesting to see how he finishes out his, you know, visits and stuff. And good for him. You know, he waited and he got some more offers. So I guess, you know, what he wanted to happen, happened.
Right.
So if he does pick Baylor, I think that means he really wants to be a Baylor.
Right.
So that's a positive. I wanted to talk about 2 more names. Yusuf Terry, just briefly. Baylor is still recruiting him. Still trying to get Yusuf Terry. They've liked him for a really long time.
Clearly, yeah, because a lot of teams have just said, you know what, we're moving on, brother.
Right, and it's a tough situation just because, you know, he plays receiver. Receiver's not really a position of need.
Not this year. Definitely after next year.
Right, and so it's interesting. They're still recruiting him hard, still, you know, making him a priority, still visited him so recently. So all I know is they're still on him, but it just would be hard for me to believe that he's going to leave being close to home.
Yeah, I don't see it. I just don't see it because I feel like if that was something he was open to, then he would have signed the early signing period. A Rutgers offer or whoever offer. The only school in that area that I would understand if he's like, all right, this changes everything, would be a Penn State, someone along those lines. But we're not talking Penn State. We're talking Rutgers and Temple. And I know that Temple has turned into a very solid program. And if Temple and Rutgers are the reasons why you weren't signing with Baylor to begin with, then I just feel like you're end up at Temple or Rutgers. And the Fran Brown relationship and all of that, just I'm not very positive on this one, Grayson, is I guess what I'm trying to say. Now, if he were to sign, awesome. Awesome. But I'm just not banking on it, whereas at least with a lot of these others, you know, there's a hope there that, oh, no, yeah, they'll probably land those guys.
It's the weirdest thing because I keep hearing, oh, like Baylor's in a great spot. Like, great spot. Probably still in the lead, probably still going to land him, and I'm just like...
Through your Power 5 offer, the other... Well, Rutgers is Big 10, basically.
Sort of.
Barely.
But I just don't... I'm with you. I don't get a good vibe from it. I kind of just don't see it happening. It's almost like Cecil Powell, kind of both of them. I'm just like, there's no way I could say he's for sure going to Baylor. Like, not at all.
Right.
Like, I don't feel confident about it.
And I'm not saying this about Yusuf or Cecil Powell. I mean, I don't know the young men. If they're being recruited by Baylor, I know they're good young guys. But, yeah, it's just hard for me to not also think of, like, the negative side of just loving the attention and loving – you know, if you're used of all the Baylor attention that you got, and now even if you feel like maybe you're not going in there, you're not going to quite let that go until you have to. So I'm not saying that's what he's doing, but that's the pessimist in me that thinks that way of like, yeah, you're going to enjoy all the attention while you have it, but ultimately it's not going to be a place where you end up going.
Yeah, Yusuf, one thing I do want to mention on Yusuf, just because I think he actually is, you know, a really good kid. He is going through some family stuff, and so I think that's kind of a big part of
it. Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
And so when you're going through something like he is, I know that that can impact a decision.
Oh, yeah.
I think the Rutgers visit kind of made him rethink some things, mm-hmm. based like just how important it might be to be close to home. And I kind of just think that might outweigh the school that he may like the best. I truly think Baylor is his favorite school.
I think it is too, but I wasn't even getting to that point just yet. I mean, even the friend relationship alone and just the proximity, but yes, with a family member who's having health issues, I mean, that to me is just even more swinging in the direction of he's staying closer to home. So yeah, that's not somebody I'm really holding out too much hope for, but it would be a great get if they could land him.
Yeah, and so the last guy kind of on the radar, of course, there's grad transfers as well. They're still looking at, you know, Zach Abercrombie from Rice, still haven't offered, but they're still looking at him, evaluating a million offensive linemen, it feels like. I think they're still looking at maybe a grad transfer at safety as well. I think that those three positions, they're still evaluating to find the best guy.
Is there any way they can go find a guy by the name of Eric Thomas, who may or may not be Derek Thomas in the flesh, but somehow found a loophole?
From Temple, if maybe Fran could.
Yeah, from the Northeast.
Send a favor.
Maybe.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love it if they could take two or three grad transfers at those positions. I think that would be just a great way to supplement the development of the young guys. Mm-hmm. We'll see on that.
The only thing I hate about that is that they're gone after a year. That's the only thing I hate, because you just get this little bit of Derek Thomas and boom, he's gone. Or this little bit of, well, I was almost going to say Jalen Hurd, but he wasn't that same way. He just had to sit out a year. But
McClendon,
yeah. I mean, although there, it's like, okay, thanks for your time, you know, whereas Derek Thomas was a much bigger impact. Right. But yeah, that's the only thing I don't like. But hey, if they're one or two or three guys that give you that 1 year and that's what you need to take you over the top, then that's absolutely the way you should go.
Yeah, I mean, if they landed a Derek Thomas that, you know, on the defensive line, mm-hmm. I mean, that's another win.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that might get you another win on your schedule. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. I wanted to point out one more guy, another Georgia kid, Stephen Linton. He's listed on our website at 6'6", 200. I think he's more like 6'4", 6'5", 210, 215 type. Another Russian guy. So clearly they're putting a big priority on that after losing B.J. Thompson. You can tell they're trying to just find any way to get that position back to right as far as depth goes, and hope you hit on one, a guy that can really come in and play immediately. So, you know, he's another guy that we just don't know a whole lot about his recruitment, other than the fact that he is going to take a Baylor visit, an official, I think, next weekend, if I'm remembering correctly. But he's got, you know, Arizona State, Central Florida, Louisville, Syracuse offers. So a decent offer list, a guy that I think has been talking to, you know, these programs for a while now, is just trying to figure out which one is best for him. But he's kind of been quiet. We haven't heard a whole lot other than he's going to take an official visit. Baylor would love to have him, another very athletic kid that could come in and potentially turn into a really, you know, really, really good player.
So what's up next for recruiting now? Not, I mean, obviously the 2019, but as far as the calendar and camps and junior days and things like that, what's the next wave?
Yeah, so I know I was talking to a couple of the 2020 guys, and they're kind of telling me that they're going to be back soon to Baylor. So that leads me to believe that Baylor's probably going to have another junior day within the next month,
okay.
I would think. So definitely be on the lookout for that. That's probably going to be a lot of offensive linemen, a lot of defensive linemen, and guys that maybe were on this visit as well that they want to bring back. So that's kind of one thing to look forward to. The opening and Under Armour. Under Armour is late February, both camps, and the opening is early March, both camps. So we'll be out there covering both of those. That's going to be a lot of 2020, 2021 updates on those. And then, of course, February 6th is National Signing Day Part 2. I'd kind of be shocked if we didn't know where everyone was going prior to February 6th. I think that guys will probably either commit or at least will know kind of where they sit.
Except Cecil Pyle, who will announce he's going to wait and sign in July.
Oh, that could, yeah, that would not
Cecil, if you're listening to this, man, I love you. I don't know you yet, but I hope to. And if not, well, hey, safe travels.
Yeah, that would be really unfortunate. But I think for the most part, I don't want to say, yeah, I don't want to guarantee it. But for the most part, I think we'll know on most of them, other than the grad transfers, because they don't have to make that decision by February. So we'll know on them a little bit later.
So I saw a note on the board today, and then we'll get into some basketball here. But still eyeing, or at least, what's the best word here? Nope, not going to come up with it. Are they at least still playing with the idea of the Rice defensive tackle grad transfer, Abercrombie?
Yeah, Zach Abercrombie. So they're definitely looking at him, but they haven't offered yet. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where they sit with him. I know Michigan, TCU, Northwestern, SMU have continued to stay in contact. He's looking to set up official visits. I personally think if Baylor offers, they're in a pretty good spot, being that they have Frank Okam who coached him. Yeah. So I think that one's really just going to come down to whether they think that Zach is better than what they have on campus. Mm-hmm. If they do, I think they bring him in. If they don't, then they'll probably just let him go. And lots of schools are still trying to talk to him. And we'll kind of see what happens with that. And I know they're going after offensive linemen and they're evaluating safeties as well as grad transfers, but we haven't heard specific names because they're evaluating so many of them.
Right.
This new transfer portal is making it just kind of very weird. I mean, you just go in, you just start clicking on guys, start figuring out, you know, what their deal is, start figuring out what their film looks like. Do they fit in with the program? And I honestly think the staff still has no idea who the top guys are, because they're seeing new guys basically every day. And so,
Yep, it's a lot to sort through. There's no doubt about that. It is a crunch time for National Signing Day number 2, so it'll be interesting to see how Baylor fills out this class, and if, in fact, it does include names like Elijah Ellis and Cecil Powell after all is said and done, and maybe even Yusuf Terry. Like, wouldn't that be something if they landed all three of those guys all over again, or maybe none of them? I mean, quite frankly, that could happen as well. There will be some additions. We just don't know how many at this point, but at least the scholarship situation is a little bit clearer now that we've seen some departures, and you can tell – I don't know if it's, I'm sure somebody's brought this up at some point or another on the board, but I think you could tell with the amount of offers going out and the scholarship situation that they were already currently in that they had an idea. They're not blown away by B.J. Thompson suddenly not being on the team anymore. That there's at least an idea in their minds of like, yeah, we may need to have to plan for one more being open or two more being open. And so if there are a couple guys who are maybe straddling the fence and deciding if they're maybe one of the next to jump into the transfer portal, then I'm sure that they have an idea about that as well. See how flexible they can get, because there's a no way they can do this situation before first National Signing Day with the number of guys they thought they were going to land. And then obviously that didn't happen. Hook Finn, we don't need to rehash that. And then the guys who didn't sign. So yeah, interesting, that there's now some more room, but who's going to fill those spots? That's the big question at this point in time. But on to basketball in this week's episode. The Baylor Lady Bears have continued on cruising on along, number 2 now in the country, or have been number 2 now for about the last week and a half since that UConn win. They beat Iowa State this week, 84-69. Iowa State actually a top 25 team, so a nice top 25 win for Kim Mulkey and company. They're doing their thing, but the men have been the one taking the headlines here lately. 3-game win streak for the Baylor men, as they have just turned into a completely different group than the ones we saw at the beginning of the year, but got this win streak started off in Stillwater last Monday night. And, I mean, that's a game you expected them to win, but also at the same time, I kind of expected them to lose just because Oklahoma State is so down and so thin roster-wise right now, and it's in Stillwater. It just felt like one of those games they're going to rally for, or Baylor's going to come out flat, but they win there and then turn right around and how about beating number 8 Texas Tech at home? I mean, what a great win that was. 73-62, they were in command. Tech made a run late, but Baylor held on. And then follow that up with one day of rest and then go head on to Morgantown and beat West Virginia 85-73. So just an incredible run of about a week for Scott Drew and company going 3-0. two of those being road wins, all three being Big 12 games, and one of those being a top 10 win. It doesn't get much better than that, and it doesn't get much different than what we were talking about earlier in the year when the season started.
Yeah, no doubt. They're on a really good streak right now. They've won six of their last eight. I think this team is starting to turn a corner. They're starting to, you know, shoot more threes, play a little bit freer. They just look a whole lot better, and they're taking steps in the right direction. I think the Oklahoma State and West Virginia wins were huge because I almost feel like they won two games by winning those, because I don't think they will lose to either one at home. So those were two big wins because we know how hard it is to win on the road in the Big 12. And so now they're just kind of trying to figure out, you know, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, how competitive are they? You know, are they really a Big 12 title contender? Like, are they really a team that could continue this run all the way through the rest of the season? I don't know the answer to that, but what I do know is it looks like they're going to be competitive in just about every single game going forward, and they're going to give teams trouble, and they're going to be very hard to beat in Waco at the Ferrell Center like they have been all year.
As long as they shoot well.
Right, right, exactly. And so they're going to get a huge test this weekend. They're playing Alabama. Alabama's been playing kind of up and down, but they've been up and down to an extent, but they've also won some big games. And so they know how to win big games on their schedule. And I think that this is going to be a huge test for Baylor. I think it would be a huge win for them if they're able to get this, and would put them in really good position to make the NCAA tournament. I'd almost be surprised if they didn't make the NCAA tournament if they won this game.
Because Alabama's good, or just because of what it does to the resume? Because now you're talking about wins over Bama, you're talking about a win over Oregon, you're talking about wins here and there, and you're kind of showing that you've not only done it against Big 12 competition. Look, there's still such a long way to go, but they're way more competitive than I think any of us thought that they would be after watching the first couple of weeks of the season. But what is it about Alabama, other than just being a good team, that you feel like would have that much of an impact?
I mean, they're a solid team who I think is actually going to end up finishing pretty well in the SEC. And so that's part of it. Another part of it is you're already at 13 games if you win this one. I think West Virginia and Oklahoma State are two games that they should win. Now you're at 15 games, and then you look at the schedule and you go, okay, Oklahoma doesn't look unbeatable right now.
No, they
look
don't.
Like they could definitely be beaten by just about anyone. So, you know, you could get a win there. TCU in Waco, definitely winnable. You still have Texas in Waco. You still have...
That's winnable too.
Exactly. There's just a lot of winnable games. And for me, I was thinking, you know, 9-9 with a win over Bama, I think gets them in. And I'm looking at the schedule right now, and I'm thinking to myself, I just would find it hard to believe that if they beat Bama this weekend, that they're not going to finish 9-9 in the Big 12. That's just kind of where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of my biggest thing about this. If they lose this game, it's not the end of the world. But I think if they win it, it puts them in much better position than if they lose it.
Yeah, and this schedule, the way that it's starting to creep up, you're going to get into your TCUs, your UTs. You're going to have some road games coming up now. You got Lubbock and Ames back-to-back in the middle of the month. Before that, you got a trip to Austin coming up in a little over a week from now. So, yeah, there's some big contests coming up. But, you know, they've made it through this first stretch of the Big 12 schedule pretty nicely, and certainly, like I said, man, it's just a big difference from what we saw at the beginning of the year. It's been a really great job by Scott Drew. I think they're just, you know, overall just shooting better helps a ton. They could not shoot to save their lives early on in the year, and that's what made me wonder about Scott Drew a little bit. I just didn't understand at the time a team that can't shoot why they decided to go to becoming a shooting team. I was just like, that makes no sense. It makes sense if you can shoot and you've got shooters, but they didn't appear to have any. And now we've seen that guys, though they do have some shooters, it's just that, you know, they weren't hitting as often as they are now. There's most definitely going to be a game or two where they're not shooting well and it's going to really kill them, but that's what happens to shooting teams, obviously. So, give Scott Drew a lot of credit. Like I said, he saw the plan, and the plan didn't seem to make sense to me at first, or probably many others, but now you see, okay, now I understand what you were going after. And oh my gosh, now imagine this lineup, as young as it is, and with a Tristan Clark back next year, how good they could be moving forward. I know we always get too far ahead of ourselves as sports fans, but it really does shape up a lot nicer than I ever would have imagined, because I was sitting there going, man, recruiting's going down the toilet, and there's just not a lot of star power. But now you're looking at Jared Butler and Tristan Clark and Mekhi Mason, and you know, maybe Mason can get another year. I mean, how huge would that be? God knows he probably deserves it more than just about anybody who's ever gotten a medical red shirt. So, yeah, man, it's been fun to watch. A whole lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right about looking ahead to next year. I think everyone's just kind of waiting till next year type feeling. But
really shouldn't, because who knows where this year's going to go.
Exactly. And Scott Drew's done an amazing job. I agree with you. He's really allowing the guards to play so free right now.
He's done a really good job for someone who can't coach, I think.
Allegedly can't coach, as we heard this week.
I don't even want to get into all that stupidity. I don't even want to get into all that. But I had to throw that in there.
The most poorly timed article in the history of poorly timed articles.
Just the conversation in general every year that we have about this, you know. I just sit back and let Scott Drew do his thing, and then I'll fret one way or the other when it's all said and done. If they make the tournament, if they don't. You know, don't make the tournament a couple years in a row, then okay. Catch a little heat, catch a little flack, but timing could have been a lot better, given what they've done here lately, for sure. Any criticism of any sort could have been better time than right now for Baylor basketball.
Right, as they're tied for first in the loss column in the Big 12.
Tied for first in the loss column, 3-game win streak. If they can beat Alabama, then who knows? Maybe the win streak can go to 5-6 games. I mean, it's certainly possible. I don't think, you know, like I said, UT's not unbeatable in Austin by any means, so maybe you're looking at 6 in a row, and that's also getting a little bit ahead. So up first for these Baylor men is Alabama, and at home as well. So part of this Big 12 SEC Challenge should be a good turnout on Saturday. Hope it is, at least. And that'll be a lot of fun to see the Baylor men back out there trying to win their fourth in a row. So do you want to get some questions?
Let's do it.
Okay, yeah, let's get into some Fast Friday podcast questions. I'll start off with Wando99. I think you're relatively new to the mailbag, so welcome. Loved your scouting report on Peyton Powell. How would you compare him to Blake Lynch coming out of high school?
Not just new to the podcast questions. First post ever is a Fast Friday podcast question. So
boom.
Love seeing that. Please ask us as many questions as you want.
I like the name too, Wando.
Yeah, Wando. But Peyton Powell obviously went through a scouting report on him. Really athletic, plays quarterback, played quarterback, I guess, at Permian and at Midland Christian. And obviously he's going to bring elite athleticism to Baylor. Just don't know what position yet. And that's kind of where we're at with him. Don't really know what he's going to excel at, what he's not going to excel at. The rumors were, you know, if he's able to transition to cornerback at 6'2", with his kind of speed and shuttle time, very agile, if he's able to flip his hips and can be aggressive enough to play defense, then I think he could literally be a first round pick at cornerback with his measurables and his testing and his size. So that's where I'm at with him, but he's going to start on offense. He's going to start at quarterback. And then if he does move, it'll be wide receiver first for Peyton Powell. Now, as far as comparing him to Blake Lynch, a little bit bigger. Blake Lynch, 6'4", mm-hmm. More so. In high school, he was listed more like 6'2", 6'3", like Peyton, but he's grown quite a bit. He's more like 6'4 now. But in high school, yeah, right around the same size. He did play quarterback, but his role at quarterback was pretty much you take the snap and you just run. And Peyton was not quite like that, especially this past year. He only ran for, I think, 480 yards, which is good, but Blake Lynch was running for 1,000 yards. Mm-hmm. He was a 1,000-yard rusher at Gilmer, and but he was also very close to a 1,000-yard receiver at Gilmer as well. So he's proven it. He was a 1,000-yard receiver at Gilmer. His senior year had 1,043 yards, 22 yards a catch, 16 touchdowns. And he also had 888 yards rushing and 19 touchdowns. Again, most of that is just taking the snap and going. That's what he did at Gilmer. Now, one thing I do want to mention is, you know, when Peyton played this past year at Permian, that's a 6A school. I mean, you're playing against, you know, the top of the top. Gilmer, I believe Gilmer is 3A when Blake was there. They're 4A
I think
now.
So yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right on that. But he would have been there 4 years ago, yes. And realignments happened twice since then. Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right on that.
I think he was 3A, is what I believe. Yeah. But I could be wrong on that. But anyways, as far as competition goes, very different. who they were playing, regardless if he was 3A or 4A, that's very different than 6A football in Texas. So. And he only threw for 289 yards. He was not he was not in there to throw the ball. Peyton Powell was a 1,000-yard passer all 3 years that he started in high school. But his first 2 years he played at Midland Christian, which is Taps. And so that was kind of a knock on him.
Blake played in 4A.
4A, okay. So,
but that's still technically 3A ball because it's bumped up by whatever. Yeah, yeah, he played 4A football.
Yeah, so a little bit lower than Peyton. But, yeah, Peyton playing 6A football this past year I think helped him grow as a player. And I think that we got to see a little bit more of kind of what he's about. But as far as comparison to what they're going to do at Baylor, I think Blake Lynch, I don't want to say that he didn't, I don't know, just the receiver didn't really work out for him the way I think that many people had hoped. I think a part of it was, you know, maybe the coaching change didn't help him kind of lock into a particular position. But one thing I want to mention about him is he did play defense in high school. He did. So
he's a safety.
Yeah, exactly. So he kind of knew how to play defense. He knew how to tackle. He knew, you know, he had games where he was the best defense player on the field.
He was back there with Chris Boyd from Texas. They were on the same team.
Right. And so that to me is where you see the biggest differences. Peyton was more of a quarterback that could run. Blake Lynch was more of a receiver and a safety, a defensive player. So I think he fits in pretty well on the defensive side. Whereas for Peyton, I think he probably, it would feel more natural for him to play defense. To play offense. You're just hoping that maybe he can translate all his athleticism and skills to the defensive side. That's kind of where I see the rub. Blake Lynch, a little bit bigger guy as well, but both superb athletes who were awesome in high school, both had great high school careers. And I think we're just seeing Blake Lynch scratch the surface, and hopefully Peyton Powell under this staff, you know, is able to hit that point a little bit sooner than maybe Blake was able to.
Nate Smith, hey guys, looking over the 19 schedule, I have two thoughts and would like both your opinions on the likeliness of it happening. Number one, Bears are bowl eligible before losing their first game of the season. They'd have to go 6-0, obviously, to get bowl eligible, and I don't feel comfortable thinking that that's going to happen. I think they'll start off 3-0 for sure with SFA, UTSA, and Rice, but first Big 12 game's Iowa State at home. I think they should win that game most likely, but it's not a gimme by any means. K-State, new head coach. Texas Tech, new head coach. Like, we don't know what those teams are even going to look like at this point, and we can't bank on them having the same type of first-year head coach struggles as what we saw with Baylor, because that's definitely not the norm necessarily. Or maybe even Chad Morris at Arkansas. Like, there's no guarantee this new head coach is going to come in and win one or two games. They may pop up and be the next big thing and win 8 or 9. So it's certainly possible, it's certainly favorable for them to win those three games, because the only two, they'd only have to win two road games. That'd be Rice and K-State. I think you feel good about them definitely winning down in Houston. K-State, again, I just don't know what they're going to even look like at this point. But, you know, on paper, I think they're going to be dogs to Iowa State, even though that'll be in Waco. But the other five, I mean, I would definitely pick them in every one of those games. And I would probably pick them right now against Iowa State at home. So I wouldn't put money on it, but I could totally see it.
Yeah, I'm taking them in every single one of these games. Just based off looking at it, I think Iowa State is not going to be as dynamic. You can't lose your two best offensive players by a mile and just be fine. Mm-hmm. That I just don't see that happening. Their defense will be good, but I think in Waco, I really think Baylor has a great shot at winning that game. I think
unless you lay an egg like Duke. I mean,
true. That's very true.
That's what I'm trying to take into account. I'm not. No, there's no given they will lay an egg, but I'm just trying to take into account. It's not as simple as like, oh, we're better, we're better, we're better, we're better, 6-0. I'm trying to think. There's some intangibles that come
right
into play.
And I would never say 100% chance this happens, but I do think it's more likely I think it's more likely that it does than it doesn't. Is kind of where I'm at. I just see this as Baylor should be taking a big step next year. K-State and Texas Tech are going to be learning new systems. Not going to say that they're going to be really bad, but just saying that that does take a little bit of time, and that is something that usually does not go great. Usually they're not going to be world beaters that first year, and so Texas Tech has a lot to replace on defense. I think their defense is going to be really bad, like even with defense, the new coach. So I don't think Baylor loses to them in Waco. K-State is an interesting one because you know they're going to have a lot of guys that play very hard, and they have a coach that is used to winning. So who knows? He might get them ready. In Manhattan is never an easy place to play. Right. That one is actually the one that I'm most nervous about. Even though they have a new coach, I think this new coach kind of provides the same culture that they're used to. Mm-hmm. And so I still think they're going to be a tough physical team. And I think Baylor will struggle the most with them. The other five, I really think Baylor should win. Even though I think Iowa State's a better team than Kansas State, you know, road versus home is a big factor. And playing Iowa State early in the year, where I still think they're going to be trying to figure out, you know, what they have, I think is going to be another factor to put in there. So I'd maybe say I think there's a better chance that they do go 6-0 than they don't.
The second part of that question, Bears then go 500 the second half of the season to finish at 9-3. And that second half of the schedule is definitely a lot harder than the first half. You've got at Oklahoma State, you've got West Virginia at home, at TCU, OU and Texas back-to-back, and then at Kansas to close out the year. So going 3-3 in that stretch. The other side of that question, Kansas, yes. I don't know. I don't see them beating necessarily OU or Texas, but those are both in Waco. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. Man, 9-3, I don't know if I'm ready to go right there, though. I mean, looking at it laid out, one half of the season versus the other half of the season, could totally see it, but 9-3 is still 9-3. It's nothing to shake a stick at. But, I mean, in the next year or two, they're going to be expected to win about 9 games. So, I mean, if it's going to happen this year, it would actually line up pretty well to make sense to do that if you just finished at 7.
Yeah, a lot of unknowns with a few of those teams. Mm-hmm. I think Kansas, you can I think you can chalk that up, though, as a win.
I would right now, yeah. I mean, they're going to be better, though.
Yeah, they will be. They'll be a little bit better, but I just still don't – I don't think their roster is at the point where they're going to be taking big steps. Maybe 3 or 4 wins next year, but they won 4 games this year, I believe. So I don't see them taking a much bigger step than that. Oklahoma State on the road in Stillwater is not going to be easy. I would probably say I think Baylor probably loses that game. I think they beat West Virginia. I think West Virginia is going to take a step back next year, and it's in Waco. TCU will be better. That's going to be a tough one. I actually think Baylor will lose that one, but I think Baylor will get one of these two at the end. I think they'll get either Oklahoma or Texas. I really do. You get them back-to-back weeks. I know Tech got them back-to-back weeks and couldn't beat either one, but they were right there with both of them. I think Baylor will be better than Texas Tech was this year or this past year. I think Baylor will sneak up and get one and then beat Kansas. So 9-3, very possible. You know, that is tough to just say, oh, yeah, they're going to win 9 games. That's just tough for I think, me to say. But I do believe that 8-4, 9-3, one of those two, I think, is the most likeliest scenario in my mind.
If I had to choose between the two, I'd go 8-4. But, yeah, they should certainly be in the 8-9 win range with what they have coming back and what they showed this year, because all the guys, even for the holes that they have, like all of the juniors should just be so much better by next year based on their improvement this year and then obviously this next spring as well. Ateneo, who's one – or excuse me, there's one more. Glad Cole, did Tyrell Jenkins enroll in Baylor this semester? Any update? The former Baylor quarterback commit from like 15 years ago that went and played – minor league baseball, and his baseball career came to a close about a year or so ago, and it was after he'd gotten traded from the Braves to the Rangers, and the Rangers released him, but there was the scuttlebutt that maybe he could pull a Brandon Whedon, you know, and come back and play college football at dadgum 28 29, 30 years old. Have you heard anything else on that here lately?
I haven't yet. I haven't heard an update on that, so I don't believe he has enrolled. I think I would have heard if he had enrolled already.
Last I saw, and Tyrell and I have followed each other on Twitter for a few years, he was taking his kids to school this morning, so I don't think he was pulling the Brian Nance of, you know, driving from Temple and dropping the kids off and doing all that. I don't think he was getting going to Baylor practice following that. So yeah, no update as far as that goes.
Yeah. Ateneo 24, who is one guy on offense and defense that will be a project but may have the highest ceiling of this 2019 class?
Of the 2019 class. You got anybody off the top of your head?
Yeah. I'm going to kind of do a little what if scenario, because on the defensive side, for me, a what if kind of guy is Garmin Randolph that we talked about, the kid from Georgia. So if Baylor lands him, he would be my pick on the defensive side. But since he's not a current Baylor commit or signee, I'll pick someone else. And I think I'm going to go with, just off the top of my head, I think the highest upside that I see, I think I'm going to go with Will Williams.
That's actually who I was going to say.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. That's fine. We can both say it.
I love the way he plays. Yeah. I really do. I think he's going to play linebacker extremely physically and extremely athletically, two things that, you know, would be great for this Baylor defense to have. I just love his game, and I really think he's going to translate very well at Baylor. I think he's got a very high ceiling at linebacker. I think he can put on the weight, hold the weight, while keep the speed that he does have. So he's my pick on the defensive side. Do you have one on the defensive side, or is it him?
Yeah, it's Will Williams. I mean, I guess the other guy that I would potentially look at, depending on what he does, is a Gabe Hall, because I think he's very very much a guy who's got a lot of upside. So he's somebody I'll consider, but I just don't even know where he's playing yet, though. So yeah. Don't really know where to place him. But, yeah, I'd say Will Williams on defense. That he was my initial thought. And on offense, the highest upside, who you got?
I'm going to kind of go maybe in a unique direction a little bit, since he's a JUCO. But I think Blake Bettier is a guy that has a very high ceiling for Baylor. I think he could be an all-conference type guy. I just think he's got great feet. He moves so well for a guy that's his size. And he could come in and immediately play, which is big. And then I think he could be an NFL draft pick, you know, in the next year or two. So I'm going to go with him, even though we're not going to get a chance to see him, you know, completely develop from a freshman till now. I think his upside is very high.
I don't really see any other good candidates, quite frankly. I mean, is Peyton Powell going to play offense? Jalen Ellis, I don't think he's got the highest upside. Zeno, maybe I'll go Jacob Zeno here. I think I'm going to go Jacob Zeno, actually, with that, because I do like his talent and I do like his upside. And yeah, I'll just go ahead and roll with him there. So appreciate the question, A to Neo. Baylor Bears fight. Does Mekhi Mason intend to apply for a sixth year of eligibility? If not, is he open to bribes?
Ashley mentioned this, I think maybe a week ago, that he's still considering it and it's still kind of up in the air. I don't know that I would bank on it. It's just one of those things. He's had so many injuries and he's planning on going and playing overseas, playing some basketball overseas. So, you know, he's having a good year now. What would lead him to stay and give up, you know, going and playing pro basketball while he still can?
Mm-hmm.
The injury history is kind of where I'm like, I don't know. I would love him to stay. I think he would be a great guy to keep. I think he's a winner, and that's rare to see. And he can shoot the ball, which is something that, you know, is great to see in today's game. But I just would find it hard to believe that he does.
Yeah. I mean, if he did, that'd be fantastic. But the only part of that is that you just don't know what the NCAA is going to do. And that goes along with part two of the question. Does Sikkim 365 sources expect the NCAA to give Baylor some combination of A, a bowl ban, B, recruiting restrictions, or C, stripped wins conference championships? Dude, if I gave you any type of an answer, I'd be lying to you, because anybody who has expectations not named Mac Rhodes or Linda Livingstone or someone like truly in the know who's had those conversations with the NCAA has absolutely zero idea what they're talking about. They don't know what they're talking about. we can all speculate, we can compare it to other cases that are similar, and we can say this about, well, Penn State got their wins back or whatever, but we have no idea what the NCAA is going to do. There's part of me that feels like they've got to do something, because if they were to come out and announce, hey, we checked on Baylor, and hey, everything's all good over there, no, we're not going to strip anything, I would kind of find that hard to believe, because I do fully believe that public pressure dictates a lot of what goes on nowadays, which is really stupid and unfortunate. But I think public pressure is going to almost force their hand into doing something. Now, having said that, they don't have to. Who cares what the public thinks? Were they going to burn down the NCAA like nobody's wanted to do that for the last 50 years? Of course. They've always been hated, so why not just continue to be hated? But I don't know enough about the evidence that was handed over or the information provided to know what kind of serious, like, I don't think there's anything serious out there that's like, oh, death penalty. I'm not expecting that. I'll say that one thing. I'm not expecting the death penalty, but anything else, I really have no idea. I mean, because I could have every piece of information available to me and say, there's no way they're getting a bowl ban, and they get a bowl ban just because the NCAA on that day feels like, well, we've got to do something. You know what I mean? So I don't think death penalty, but anything else, I mean, I'm not going to rule out.
Yeah, I'm not going to rule anything out. I just would find it really, I mean, but we've seen this from the NCAA, just very, you know, inconsistent with different things, but it would just be very unfortunate to see them give a program that had nothing to do with the situation a bowl ban now, right, after they haven't done it the past 2 years. To now all of a sudden decide to do that, I just find that would be just a little bit ridiculous to me. Same with the recruiting restrictions. Now, as far as stripping, taking away something, like, maybe, like, wouldn't shock me. Maybe they do it just to
do something. Because, I mean, like you said, like, if you eliminate the two things that you just said, what else is there to do?
Right.
I mean, you can only do major severe penalties, or you hit recruiting, or you hit wins, but other than that, they can't do anything else. Like, they can't take away your stadium or do any of that. So they've got wins, recruiting, and, you know, that.
Bowl game. Yeah, bowl games. Yeah, I'm with you. It just anything that comes out that's not, you know, retroactive would be really bad timing, and kind of really bad of the NCAA to do that, in my opinion, this late after they've had all the facts for
they don't care
3 years. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, we don't know. We don't know for sure, so it's hard to speculate on it. But I don't think that it's going to – I'm with you. It's not going to be the death penalty, I don't think.
No. So appreciate the question.
Yeah.
Wish we knew. I mean, geez, I'm tired of waiting too.
I know. Rule whip. What will the safety position look like next season? It seemed to me like we gave up big plays last year constantly because of bad angles taken by the safeties. Is that to do with the defensive scheme, lack of – the athleticism needed for the system, or just the individuals at the position?
Well, it's not the scheme. I'll tell you that right away. It's not the scheme. They're not putting those guys in bad angles and making them take those. That's, I think, part of B and C that you said. I think it's a mixture of the individuals, and I think it's a mixture of the lack of athleticism, because I don't think Kedrick Vaughns is the most athletic guy in the world. I think it's a lot of it, too, is instincts. Like, there just wasn't very good instincts at all in the secondary last year at the safety spot. I mean, you couldn't even see the angles that could potentially be coming because you're just taking the wrong ones to begin with. But, I mean, there was just no, like, seeing the play before it happened kind of instances, really. So I think it's the individuals, and I think it's the lack of athleticism. In some cases, now, the lack of athleticism could also be immaturity. Could be in the case of a JT Woods or a Christian Morgan. Mistakes that they may have made could be the scheme, because they're still learning it, as opposed to guys who have been already under it for 2 years fully. So that could have a little bit to do with the scheme. I'll give you that. But the scheme itself, when it's known, that's not the issue. That's the one thing I would rule out. But learning it, then yeah, it could still cause you some problems. So I go with just the players that they have back there. And I think, like, Vaughns and Miller and those guys, you know, I know Vaughns is gone now. Miller's back for one more year, but they were also recruited for a different system, you know, and they were recruited to run Phil Bennett's defense, not Phil Snow. So that's a little bit of a difference, and it's not going to click for everybody or work for everybody. And who knows, maybe for Kedrick Vaughns, if he had a couple more years, then by the time he was a senior, would have been aces. But, you know, he unfortunately was just caught kind of in the middle and had to learn what he could while he could. And Unfortunately, ran out of time before he could probably master it to the level that he would have liked to, or anybody else on the defense for that matter, just using him as an example.
Yeah, and Verkiedrick was recruited to play cornerback, too, and was a cornerback for a long time. So, I mean, that's tough. They just needed him to do it. And as far as other guys just on the roster, so Verkiedrick's gone. You return Chris Miller, who I do think there is something there.
Bad ankles.
He just has to – he has got – yeah. He is so – his angles can be really frustrating, but he plays so hard that it makes you want to overlook it. But he definitely has to take a step. They need him to be better because they need him to be a senior leader in that group, because Christian Morgan, JT Woods are the two guys that, you know, played last year. They're still only sophomores, so they're going to take a step, but they need those two to take a big step next year, like really badly. And we're going to see. I think they both flashed at times, but they need to be more consistent. And but I do think they're going to help. Their athleticism is definitely an upgrade from what Baylor has had. So that's going to be huge. And then, of course, they, you know, in the recruiting class, Solomon Turner, Hakeem Vance, Tyrone Brown are all guys that I think will get a look at safety. Now, they may not stay there, but I think they will definitely get a look at that position. And, you know, any of those three could be candidates for playing time. And then Jaron McVay, the walk-on, will also be a guy that will get some looks at safety.
Former starter versus Liberty, Jaron McVay.
Right. He also got a start this year, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, I think that that's what the position looks like to me. Now, as far as scheme, I do not believe it's scheme at all. I personally believe that it is all about talent, and maybe a little bit about instincts as well. But to be frank, I mean, you watch the Vanderbilt game, and their running back ran right by Verkiedrick Vaughns. Mm-hmm. And if you watch Alabama player, you watch some of those best defenses play, they take bad angles at times. But they're so athletically gifted that they can make up for it and turn those – touch, you know, those 70-yard touchdowns that Baylor's giving up into a 30-yard gain. Mm-hmm. And that's the big step that this defense needs to take. They need to be able to keep those big gashing, you know, great calls by the other team and keep it from being a touchdown.
Yeah, the defense is still pretty slow.
Yeah.
They looked very slow last year.
Yeah, for sure. And so they have steps to take, but I do believe it is an athleticism thing. I do not believe it's a scheme thing. You go watch those games and
Watch Temple when they were adjusted to what they were doing, and they were just, that was just their natural way of playing defense. They knew where they were supposed to be. They took good angles. It all worked. It worked just fine. But I still think there's a little bit of a learning process going on, and until you have like a four-class cycle of where that's just what everybody's done all along, then you're still going to probably for the next – probably the next season or so have like this learning gap, especially when there's going to be young guys being called upon to play early. Ideally, you get a situation where you don't have to play the freshman safety until he's ready, or just because he's so dadgum good that you just want to. But they've almost been forced to push guys in there, even if they are still learning it, and that leads to overthinking or thinking of three things at once and being in the wrong spot. Kind of a deal. So
yeah, and Coach Rule's talked about they need to get to the point where the players are teaching the players.
Right. They're getting there.
And so I do believe it is kind of the individuals, but they're gonna get better. You see the talent coming in, and so I expect the safeties to be quite a bit better next year. I really do. So thanks for the question, Rule Whip. Alpha Needle, predictions for the baseball team. Where do they finish in the Big 12? Is this the year they make it to Omaha? What are three things that need to occur for them to get a College World Series berth?
Well, I don't have three things for you off the top of my head, but prediction is they're going to be one of the best teams in the Big 12, and they're going to be a top 25 team probably throughout the season and in the nation. I do think they should be a favorite amongst the favorites for the Big 12 title, and I think that's what expectations from fans should be. Any other showing that's not anywhere close to that, I think would be a massive disappointment. So I think they're right there in the top 2 to 3 programs in the Big 12 this year, as far as just overall talent and what should be expected of them. So I think a top 3 finish, if not top 2, maybe possibly even, but somewhere in that vicinity. I'm not going to say they're going to make it to Omaha, but boy, if they were ever going to have a crack at it, then this would be the year to do it. So do you have three things, and what do you think about the other couple of questions there?
Yeah, I do. I think Baylor is top three. I think they end up finishing second in the Big 12. I think Tech still wins the Big 12 this year. I agree with you. This is the year to make it. You don't get to return this many guys very often, actually ever.
Probably won't ever happen again under Steve Rodriguez.
So this is the year for it to happen if they're going to, and I think they have the experience to do it now. Mm-hmm. They got there twice, have lost, you know, both times. I think now it's time to take that step. I don't know if they're going to make it to the College World Series, but I would predict that they're going to make it to a Super Regional this year.
Yeah, I'd go with that, but Omaha, that's just so tough.
It's so tough to predict that, but I do think they're going to have an awesome year. Now, as far as three things that need to happen, they need to get a national seed, in my opinion, meaning they need to host if they want to make it to Omaha. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that they just need to do. Going and winning on the road, you can get set in a regional like they got last year where they had to go to California and they played two California teams. And so that was tough. And so I think national seed, which means they have to take care of business during the non-con because their schedule is super soft. So by the time conference play starts, they need to have, I'd probably say 17 or 18 wins out of 20 games, I think, mm-hmm. which is tough. I mean, that's not easy to do. Second thing, build a solid bullpen. They lost a lot of arms in the bullpen. That's basically the only position that they really lost much. Losing Montemayor as your closer, gonna have to figure that out. I think Kyle Hill will step in okay there, but as far as, you know, the rest of the bullpen, they're gonna have to find new guys that step up and allow, you know, for their starters to come out of games, and they can still win those games with their bullpen and win those midweek games that can be so tough. And then the last thing is just avoid injuries. Can't have costly injuries that cause them to lose, you know, three or four games during the season because then you're not a national seed anymore.
Yeah, stay off those motor scooters.
Yeah. So those are my three things that I think this is going to be a great year for the baseball team, though.
Yeah, and for anybody that doesn't get the motor scooter joke, last week, did I even mention that on the podcast?
I think you did, yeah, the Texas.
Okay, yeah,
yeah.
Texas' starting shortstop leadoff hitter out for the season because he crashed his little toy motorcycle or scooter or whatever it actually was on campus. So, yeah, avoid that and stay healthy. Yeah, no doubt. So thank you, Alfredino. Oh, yeah, the second part of the question, maybe not the right place for this question. I haven't heard Mac Engel on Necessary Roughness lately. Is he still a regular guest, or have I just missed him? No, he hadn't been on at all for like 3 or 4 months now. But all those people that complained about him that apparently listen to my show all the time, I mean, haven't heard from any of you guys since he wasn't on the show. So that leads me to believe that most of y'all weren't listening anyways, which is totally fine. But I just find it funny when there was the amount of complaints that there were about Mac. And make no mistake, Mac's not on the show anymore because people on the boards or on Twitter were complaining about it. It's because I decided on it because of the move that he pulled with those statistics a few months back when it Baylor had released, what was it exactly? It was the, this is how much it matters to me that I can't remember exactly what led to it. But it was that piece that he had put out that clearly had wrong information in it. Now, I will say that the information that was wrong was on Baylor's side of things. It was like a typo led to saying like 85% of undergrads have been raped on campus. It was some ridiculous number. I think everybody remembers that now. So it was whenever that happened, and then it was pointed out, and I even that day, early in the morning, mind you, pointed out to Mac why his article was inaccurate and told him, like, hey, dude, those are the wrong numbers. Yeah, but this is what Baylor sent to me. Okay, I get that, but they're the wrong numbers, so you should probably go and change them. And he did not change that article, even though this conversation between he and I in DMs had happened at like 11 a.m., that did not change until like 11 o'clock that night because I kept looking, waiting for some correction by the Fort Worth Star-Telegram because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do when your information is wrong. But they just left it up there and left it up there, and Mac knew exactly what was going on, and it pissed me off. You know, sorry it did, because that's just being a troll, and I know that he's always been that way or whatever. Fine, I don't care to hear all of that. That was the instance that where I was just like, no more. I'm not going to do this anymore. I've defended you at times. I think some people have gone overboard on him at times because they hear what they want to hear and read what they want to read and just don't give him any benefit of the doubt. Not to say he's not ever wrong. He's wrong a lot, but that was the day where I was just like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And it wasn't because of any single complaint, because if it was only based on complaints, y'all could have kept calling or emailing or whatever. And I don't know if we ever got any of those anyways, but it wouldn't have changed him being on the show. That's what changed him being on the show. And I had at that point, just with the various instances, had added up and added up. And that one was the one that blew the top off. So, yeah, made the call for him not to be on there anymore. But everybody knew that, right? Everybody that was complaining about him, you all knew about that. Lucchese Bear, who are the most likely, in your opinion, to finish out the class?
I'm going to just kind of go with the guys that I mentioned earlier. I think PMP and Garmin Randolph are the first two. I think Baylor, it's tough to say they're for sure going to land them, or it's most likely, but I just get a feeling that they've made them such a priority that they're going to find a way to get them. And getting Randolph over LSU would be a huge get for this class, and that just shows that they're really making him a priority. And that's a big thing. I think they land PMP as well. Now, to finish it out, I think they get a grad transfer on the offensive line. I think that's something that they're going to look at getting. That gives you three. Then I'll go with the grad transfer on the defensive line as well. So I'm going to say four there. And then, you know, they might have one more spot open.
Oh, perfect for Brew McCoy.
And Brew McCoy got a transfer to Baylor instead of Texas.
After a week at Texas, he's going to decide he's not happy there either and decide to leave there.
Yeah, and go to Texas Tech, right?
Yeah.
But so maybe one more spot. And if there is one more spot, oh, gosh. I don't even want to predict. Cecil Powell. That's sure.
Okay. Yeah. Why
Let's
not?
Let's say Cecil Powell. Why not?
Say I him think, or Yusuf Terry or whoever.
Or Steven Linton or a bunch or Elijah Ellis. It's just what in I don't know what to do there. I think Elijah is maybe the most likely.
That's me because I'm not expecting Terry and at Powell at this point. I have no idea. I really don't. I don't think he's got the same things drawing him staying closer to home that Terry does. Obviously, but he's just so quiet. Who really knows? To be sure. So, yeah, I would say of the guys who have been commits or technically still considered commits, then Elijah Ellis would make the most sense. So, definitely line heavy to close out this class is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, hey, we at least know there's some flexibility there that there didn't appear to be about a month ago where it looked like they'd probably already be out of scholarships and now they could potentially sign like five more guys.
Yeah, it's that transfer portal is making things very interesting for football programs
across
the country. It's
going to be the death of college football, man.
It might be. I mean,
it's
such
a bad idea.
It's getting absolutely crazy. Guys just throwing their name in there and then not even leaving. It's just the weirdest thing.
That's what we need to do for a bunch of guys who grew up getting way more attention than they needed to get anyways for just being good at football. We need to now give them even more attention because now they're looking at leaving the school. Like, you kidding me? No, we don't. Now if you know you're going to get your name in there just by simply entering the transfer portal, but you have no intention of even leaving, you could just do that just to get some attention. Now, I don't know how many guys would really be motivated by that alone, but I mean, it's a circus, and it's only going to get worse and worse and worse. This is year one of this thing. This is the first year. You've already got guys signing on signing day, an OC leaves, in the case of Brew McCoy, and 2 weeks after arriving on campus, he's already apparently been granted his release, but is you know, changing his mind and leaving. We got guys who aren't happy about playing time after not playing as, like, freshmen at high-caliber programs because they were a four-star that are suddenly, oh, I want to go somewhere. Like, it's so ridiculous.
Or guys going to Georgia who have a
not starting right away.
Who just had a quarterback who took off. You went into that situation already knowing you're probably not going to start, but that's another situation. You even got guys holding programs hostage, which I find the most ridiculous. Like Casey Thompson at Texas.
Well, he's just waited now.
Right, but what he did was he left until he basically got his way, which was Bouchelle and Rising leaving. And then he's like, oh, now I'm second on the depth chart, just like I wanted. Then he comes back and is, you know, feeling all great about it. But that was basically holding a program hostage. If these two things don't happen, then I'm not going to come back, and I have this option now. But then he comes back. Now he's all happy about it. I just think it's ridiculous.
Now he's great Longhorn. All this. Yeah, because he waited and saw everybody else leave. So, I'm by default the number two quarterback now.
Right.
Yeah, big gutsy decision there. Gotta say, way to step on that ledge. But, yeah, I'm not a fan of the portal. From an entertainment standpoint, I am. But overall for college football, I don't think it's a good thing in the long run for this sport. I think it's making it way too much like the NFL instead of, like college football. But it's always been a little different because of recruiting and how insane that side of the sport is. This just makes it that much nuttier, and there's some really, really bad precedents. We just mentioned like three of them that are already being set in this first year that otherwise aren't even happening. I mean, for most of the time, at least. You have guys who sign on signing day, and then maybe they have second thoughts, but like this Brew McCoy situation, that doesn't happen normally ever. Or even freshmen being surprised by the fact that they're not beating out a senior All-American for a starting spot. Oh, I'm leaving then. It's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. But this has been a ridiculously fun episode of the Sikkim 365 Fast Friday podcast. That's going to do it for us this week. Grayson, anything before we go?
No, I don't think so. Just kind of grind until signing day and getting ready for spring football to kick off. But another good episode. I think we got through a lot.
Yeah, and this will be the last time I talk to you guys for a couple of weeks, because I'll be in Atlanta next week. I'll let you know that. There'll be a Super Bowl, so I think you're going to be hosting solo next week. But I'll be right back after that, and then don't really see too many things scheduling-wise that'll be problematic for the podcast, but you'll still handle it, and we'll reconnect here in a couple of weeks, and who knows what all goes on between now and that time. So should be a big episode at that point, but enjoy your weekends, your weeks, whenever you are listening to us. We do appreciate the time, as always. Definitely check into the Sikkim365.com premium section if you have not done so already, and join in on the fun there as well. And just check out the site, period, if you haven't done so already as well. Your one-stop shop for all your Baylor needs. So that'll do it for us this week. We'll talk to you next week, or Grayson will, and I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. It's been the Fast Friday Podcast on Sikkim365.com.